Okay. Before I start, we didn't thank Danny. That's what I was thinking, is that, you know, Danny sat meeting after meeting with like three or four women and constantly had to bring us in. And actually, I think every single meeting he got up and left and said, okay, we're good, okay. And we stayed for an extra hour going through stuff. And so it's true, but honestly, he's the mastermind and he's the budgeter and all of the good behind this. So, you know. Honestly, you know, Neil brought it to my attention. He really is a mail truck. He's a counselor. He's going to stop. He's a one-on-one, going to stop and make sure you're good. So I feel like he might be more mailman and at home a tractor. Okay. Hey, I'm what he's stopping. He needed to be strong. So it's good.
She needed a tractor. So.
I needed a tractor, and that is the truth. All right. Okay, here we go.
Before we get started,
yeah.
Can I just thank you for cheering all the guys wanting to do what you did about breakfast? So thank you.
What's this 10:30 thing? Okay, so let me see which to start with. Okay, this one's good. How often do you recommend enjoying Red Hot Monogamy?
Yeah.
Start off strong.
That's great. So so there's studies that are done about like how often you should have Red Hot Monogamy, but we actually think it's every couple specific. A few times a week is the average. And the older you get, the less often, and it's more because of the change in the testosterone on the guy's side. So I say that because when you're young in marriage, sometimes, you know, well, Bill likes to say they're always interested in us. Like we step out of the shower.
I almost feel like I need to, you know, like mildly apologize to you ladies, but we just are interested. And when you get in the morning, like we're thinking that's a good time, and when you're getting in the shower, we're thinking that's a good time, and when you're getting out of the shower, we're thinking that's a good time, and when you're making breakfast, we're thinking that's a good. I mean, we just are interested, and it kind of goes by the minutes,
right?
Not the days,
right? Yeah. And so because of that, oftentimes young brides, they're like, again? Or when you start having kids, they're like, everybody wants something from me. And so you can get so you are not wanting to give Red Hot Monogamy as much as your husband may want it. And I just want to remind you that in midlife, his testosterone goes down and yours goes up. And so he walks in from work, and you're like, now's a good time. And he's, like, working on the car. It's like, now's a good time. And he's painting the bathroom. You're like, now's a good time. And so just remember that it's going to switch at some point, okay? So keep that in mind. Also, one of the things that I did in Red Hot Wife Challenge is I counted up how many weekends if you live to be like 84, 85, which is like at the top side for the average life expectancy for a guy, like how many Saturdays or how many weekends is that? It's not very many weekends. And the older you get, the more precious that time of Red Hot Monogamy is, because you realize, wow, there may not be that many more. Whew, getting all emotional. So all that
to say. We need to close early.
Yeah. All that to say. I speak a lot for. We speak a lot for military marriage conferences, and I was at a military marriage conference. And okay, so here's the other thing: the more Red Hot Monogamy you have, it lowers your husband's chances for. Cancer.
Prostate cancer.
So, yeah, it cleans the pipes. Yeah. So that's another thing.
Don't you love her?
You can save his life. But I just love this phrase that the military, the people that minister to the military and their military wives themselves, because they are deployed so much and because they just have extra pressure on their relationship, they know that red hot monogamy is like super glue that holds them together through really tough times. And so their motto is 4 times a week with enthusiasm.
So let me just add to what Pam says. I just so appreciate her attitude towards this whole arena, because a lot of people are embarrassed to talk about this part of life, and I think it's important we talk about it, especially in the world in which we live in. And I think as a church, we need to have a new perspective on what sex is all about, because God did create us as sexual beings. It's not like we came up with this on our own or we decided to do something different than God's design. God did make us sexual. But he also made us very different. And I think he did that for two reasons. One is sex is supposed to be a relational decision between you as a couple. It's not an activity. It's not a thing on your checklist that you check off. It's a decision you make as a couple. And that's why the Bible doesn't have a lot of specific instructions. You won't find anything in the Bible about how often you're supposed to have sex, what's allowed in the bedroom, what's not allowed in the bedroom. There are some general principles that you're supposed to be yielded to one another, so you agree on what you're doing. You don't force one another, so you never ask each other to do something that they have said, I'm really not comfortable with that. And it's just the two of you. It's a private act between the two of you. Now, within those boundaries, God seems to say whatever you decide to do to express your love to one another, he's okay with.
Right. So you can say yes to an activity. That was an acrostic. Yes to an activity. If you yield to one another,
extended in love,
and you
secure it with privacy.
Yeah.
So yes. Why yes? And so the implication is that what keeps sex vibrant throughout your lifetime is you talk about it. Is you periodically ask, so what do you like? What do you not like? What do you hope we try? Because it's a decision between the two of you. And when you have that secret between the two of you, that's one of the things that adds value to marriage, because it makes your marriage relationship different than every other relationship you have on earth. And the second thing about a sexual relationship is it's actually designed to help you be great. And what I mean by that is Jesus said, if you want to be great in God's kingdom, you become the servant of all. And if you're going to have a satisfying sex life, it's because you have learned to serve one another, because your sexual needs are so different. And there's no way for you to understand. Like guys, you know, we're married to ladies who operate very different sexually than we do. They have a very slow warm-up period. Their sexual interest is tied to everything that we do. So what you said to her before you left for work in the morning is part of her sexual experience. You know, and for us, we're just like, man, she took her clothes off. Oh! Okay, but for her, it's this all-encompassing experience that we have to learn to address. And if it's our goal to figure out, I'm going to figure out how she's wired, and I'm going to make it my goal to do the things that keep her interest high, it's an act of service on your part. And when you learn to live that way, her interest in having sex with you grows, and which means you're going to have sex more often. If you ignore all of that, then she has to fight through the, you know, he's not really interested in me. I feel like I'm just another thing on his list. And, you know, I feel like he just saw me, like he hasn't done anything, blah, 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 blah. And it's the same for you ladies. Like us guys, we have this physical thing that happens, and semen actually builds up in our body. And we don't mean to be unreasonable, but we get irritable. Yeah. We're just like, I know I'm being like a jerk right now, but I'll be okay afterwards, really.
Like, if we girls realize how much power we have, that, like, after great sex, you can ask almost anything and get a yes. Like, we have to be, like, really, like, connected to Jesus to not manipulate that power.
But when I remember, I mean, Pam is, she is a great, I didn't even want to call her assistant in ministry, because she's way more than that. She's a great partner in ministry. And it's been one of my great privileges to minister alongside of you our whole life. But when I was preaching every Sunday, Pam would always want to help with the sermon. You know, she's got great ideas. She got, you know, this. And so she would say, you know, hey, do you need any help with your sermon? You know, kind of, and I'm like, one time I said, well, actually what would help the most?
Yeah.
You got her, huh? You know, like, You know, if we have great sex Friday or Saturday night, I will preach better.
Yeah. So, like, it's okay to schedule it in. It is good to, like, try for once a week. It's because it is, like, super glue. The Bible tells us to not deprive one another except for, like, mutual consent. Then come back for prayer. Mm-hmm. And then come back so that you're not tempted. And so red hot monogamy is very, very powerful in unity. And so if you go longer than a few weeks or a month, 6 weeks, you know, there's times in pregnancy, 8 weeks even, after surgery, maybe even 12 weeks. So if you go longer than 12 weeks, there's probably another issue going on. And then you might want to look deeper. And we like to... we don't have our rings. We wore out our rings. Like this last week, I lost my ring in Burlington Coat Factory. So.
Hey, it's okay. She has a diamond edition jacket now.
Yeah. So, I got such a deal, $28 and the cost of a diamond, for our jacket. But, and Bill handled it really well. Our 40th wedding anniversary is coming up, and so I'm sure he's going to do something fabulous. He actually said that to me in the store. Don't worry, your 40th is coming. Where was I going with that? Oh, so that the Bible says those are the two things that will keep your marriage the strongest. Red hot monogamy and prayer, those two things. And I went to the doctor, and this was early in my marriage, and I had migraines. And so I went to the doctor to talk to her about my migraines. And I'm sitting in the doctor's office, and I am looking at, like, the sidebar. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, I read in the Bible, we're not supposed to deprive yourself. Lord, you know I want to say yes to Bill as much as possible, but I legitimately can say not tonight. I have a headache because I have migraines, like, all the time. And so I read this little sidebar, and it's like, that sex is good for migraines because it opens up those blood vessels. And so now it's like, yes, tonight I have a headache, right?
This side missed the joke. It's worth repeating because everybody laughed. What was it?
He said, what else is on the list?
Oh.
Okay, another question. Okay. Are we ready?
Can I say one more thing on this arena? I would strongly encourage all of you to have this conversation and a set a goal as a couple, because Ephesians 5 makes it pretty clear that the intimate life of a married couple is part of us sharing the gospel on earth.
Yeah.
Okay, like, none of us would connect those, but the Apostle Paul did in Ephesians 5. And it's one of the reasons why marriage specifically and our sex lives are under attack. Because Satan knows if he can blur the whole sexual arena, it blurs the gospel. So part of our representation of Christ here on earth as married couples is staying intimate with one another, because at that point, our marriages reflect the gospel of Jesus Christ. Okay.
So it's anybody's anniversary this weekend? Did anybody come with their anniversary this weekend?
Yeah. In the back,
the chance.
Okay, this one's yours.
Woo!
So come. There you go.
He's like, yeah go ahead and run up here and get it. Yeah, I want that one.
Happy anniversary.
Woo!
Awesome. There was like three questions, so about that.
Sex.
Yeah. So I felt like you guys
hit them all.
Answered that. Yeah. I mean, the only one that was a little bit different is with young children, keeping it real. When you have young kids, do you have anything specific you'd want to say towards that?
Like how to have it when you have kids in the house.
Yeah. And you gave that really good example of the money, and I have a piggy bank at home. So we're going to try that, but.
Yeah, we had a Thursday night. There's two things. Trading childcare is great. And then the other is we had a Thursday night box of toys they could only play with on Thursday night. Yeah. And so that actually bought time. And then if you raise your kids so that you have a normal bedtime and you have a bedtime ritual and things like that, that's going to help you.
Yeah.
Because
totally.
You can bank on, wow, by 8:30 they'll be asleep, mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
So your parenting impacts your sex life. Just so if you need to get help in parenting and get some parenting equipping, get a parenting mentor, like, do it. It's worth it.
What age did you tell your kids about sex?
Let me answer the previous one.
Sure.
With young kids, a couple of things I would... First of all, keep your sense of humor. You know, kids are... I mean, they're wonderful, but they are the most constant interruption in life. Mm-hmm. Okay? And your sex life is not just about this month or this year. Your sex life is for life.
Yeah.
And... sometimes sex is awesome and amazing, and you just go, whoa, like, I don't know why God created all that, but that was just amazing. And other times your sex life is, huh, that was awkward. Right? And sometimes it's really satisfying, and sometimes it's kind of disappointing. And folks, it's all part of the memory of you. And when you have little kids running around, it's not always the greatest season of your life, but it creates some of the greatest memories of your life. And when you're in the midst of parenting, especially little kids, like, it's exhausting. And sometimes you're just tired of getting, everybody wants stuff. You know, because kids don't know how to be reasonable. So they just, like I'm getting reminded now as we see our grandkids. I got a 4-year-old granddaughter that is relentless. Like, she will go all day, every day, and she wants to dominate our attention. And I just pray for my kids because I know she's doing it to them too. And it's okay to say, you know what, maybe our sex life isn't the greatest right now, but it will get better as you keep investing. Okay, and your kids do grow up. I mean, when our youngest went to school, I feel like we got half our life back. It was just kind of a crazy thing. So
yeah,
so
sex in the morning is good. Sex at noon is good. Yeah. You know, so like it doesn't have to be a night, I'm saying.
Yeah, so just keep your sense of humor and, you know, be willing to adjust, but don't give up on it. You know, keep scheduling it. Keep meeting with one another. And if it's not the greatest, it's okay. Because you've got more time to work on this, and your kids do get older. Okay, now back to...
So what time, when do we talk to our kids about sex? Oh. We actually think that it's a, like, piece by piece, moment by moment kind of ongoing conversation that you have with your kids. And in the questions kids ask about sex, answers to have ready... That's exactly what the book is like all the different questions that kids ask at different ages and stages, and then like talking points to help you figure out when you're going to talk to the kids about what part of the sex act and the whole lifespan of what it means to be intimate. And so we broke it down. We had a set of really great picture books from the Lutheran Church. And so there were a set of four. And they kind of, one was about in preschoolish, and then another one was like 5-6-ish, and then another one about 11-12-ish, and then one that's like in the teen years, 15-16. Mm. So we kind of had those conversations all along, and we recommend that you be the first to talk to them about whatever it is. So you want your kids to be the smartest person in the room about sex. So that they have accurate information, not crazy stupidness that their peers might be sharing, or the television set might be sharing, or a pornography magazine they might run across, you know, that they know what is good and healthy and what God created and that it's a gift. And so the big reveal, that's usually what people are meaning, you know, when are you going to do the big reveal? When a man and a woman come together in intimacy and intercourse. And that we encourage it in that window. It's called the Oasis window. And so really think about when practically that child might need that information. Let me give you an example. We talked to our boys about the menstruation process of girls about second grade. Because some girls start early as 9 or 10 in our society now. And so we didn't want, we wanted our boys to be heroic. So let's say a girl stands up and she has blood on the back of her, you know, dress or something. Like, we didn't want our kids to be the one, like, what's up? What? Look at that. You know, we wanted our boys.
Our oldest son would have done that.
Right. We wanted our boys to be the hero that would go to the teacher and say, I think Julie needs your help right now.
Yeah.
So there's practical reasons you say certain things to kids at certain ages. And there'll be a time when your kids will ask, like, okay, like to do the Eden story about the baby.
So prior to this conversation, you want to stay in tune with their questions.
Yeah.
Because as they ask questions, you want to give them appropriate answers. Well, our oldest granddaughter, when she was about 8 years old, she said, Papa, can I ask you a question? I'm like, sure. She said, okay, now I understand how the baby gets out of the mom. I don't understand how the baby gets into the mom. And I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with this question, you know, because we've not had this conversation with her parents. And,
yet.
And so my answer to her was, you know what, honey, I so appreciate you trusting me with this, but this is a question you need to ask your mom. Because I didn't want to be like the grandpa, you know, who he was sitting in his daughter's living room. His grandson came running in and said, hey, Papa, can I ask you a question? He's like, well, sure. Because what do you call it when one person gets on top of another person in bed? And he like got all nervous and he was like, oh, I haven't talked to my daughter about this. I don't know how much I'm supposed to tell him. But I don't want him to ever think he can't come ask me questions. I don't want him to think I ever lied to him. And like in all this nervousness, he just blurted it out. He said, well, that's called sexual intercourse. And he went, okay, thanks, Grandpa, and walked off. Came back a few minutes later and said, it is not, Grandpa, it's bunk beds, and Mom wants to talk to you right now. Yeah, I didn't want to be that guy.
Typically, the big reveal is somewhere in the Oasis stage, somewhere after 8 and before 12, because in junior high, that conversation is going to come up, and it can come up in like really awful ways. And you want your kids to hear the godly, beautiful, it's a gift version of sex before they hear any other awfulness that might come their way. I remember being so frustrated. Like, our kids, even like, don't think just because they go to Christian schools could save them either. It does delay a little bit, about a year typically. Homeschool, about 2 years. So Brock is in a play, and he is probably about 8 at this point, maybe 9. And it's a community play that my friend, who's a Christian, runs. So, I mean, it's a safe environment, but there's kids from all different areas there. And they're changing their clothes to go out on stage, and I'm helping backstage, and I hear this little boy say stuff about raping, like he's like screaming that word. And I'm like, okay, I'm on stage. And on the way home, Brock's like, what's rape? And I'm like, wanted to talk to you first about what's beautiful before I have to answer this, so that I'm like, I'll get to that. Let me tell you God's plan. Mm-hmm. And so Bill and I sat down with them and explained, you know, God's beautiful plan. So that's, you just don't want to be caught unaware. So that's my whole point there.
So let me make a couple of comments about boys, because since we raise boys, and this is a real passion of mine. We have got to talk to our young men. And we have got to talk to them strategically. So if you are raising boys, you know, the big reveal is going to happen relatively early, but they're not going to get it. They're going to be like, okay, whatever. But then puberty's going to hit, and suddenly it's a different conversation. So I think there are 3 conversations that you need to have with your boys. The first one is as close to before puberty as you can get. And you need to tell them what's going to happen to their body. They need to hear from you that they're going to start growing hair in different parts of their body, that they're going to start smelling differently than they used to smell, that they're going to get erections spontaneously. They need to know what that's all about and why that's happening and what they're supposed to do about it. They also need to hear from you that they're going to start looking at girls differently. And they need to hear from you that this is a source of power in their life, that this is not a bad thing that's happening, it's not a weird thing that's happening, but it's a powerful thing that's happening. Because most boys disrespect the power. And they need to know that this is a powerful thing God's given you, and you need to respect it. So that needs to happen before puberty hits, if you can time it. So
Bill has a great illustration that he uses. We were in Germany and driving the Autobahn.
So we got this opportunity. We're in Germany. We're staying with a military family, and we're not far from the Autobahn. So one of my goals was I need to get on the Autobahn. Okay, so as we went to this people's houses, I noticed there's a Mini Cooper in their driveway. So at dinner, I asked the dad, I said, hey, I noticed you have a Mini Cooper in the driveway. When are we going out? And their 18-year-old son said, well, I'll take you. I'm like, well, I don't know if this is too smart, but I asked, so you got to man up, right? So we're going out. And his dad said something to him I've never said to any of my sons. As we're walking out the door, he says to his son, no going over 120 miles an hour. So we're on the Autobahn going 120, and we got passed by two Porsches like we were standing still. And you know, as a guy, you know what car I want to be in. I'm like, it's awesome. But then we passed one of those Porsches that didn't look like a Porsche anymore. Wow. It was on the side of the road in flames. And I realized the guy driving it didn't respect the power. And now what was awesome is a heap of flames. And that's what guys are doing to their sex drive. It's this awesome, powerful thing. They disrespect the power, and it creates a bunch of damage. Okay, so they need to hear from us. So before puberty, they need to hear physically what's going to happen. And then somewhere in junior high or prior to high school, they need to hear about girls. They need to be told, you are going to get very interested in girls. And you're going to look at them differently, and you're gonna have this thing start inside of you that you don't know what to do. You don't really understand it, and it's running hard, and it's running strong, and you're going to start seeing women as this beautiful thing that God created, and you're going to start getting weird messages from your friends and your peers about what this is all about. And they need to hear from you why God gave them a sex drive, what they do about it, and why it's worth waiting. Okay, and then before they start driving, they need another discussion from you. And that one needs to be about the kind of man you want to be. Because when they start driving, they have new opportunities, and they need to hear from you that as men, we decide what kind of men we're going to be. And at that, you need to be talking about pornography. You need to be talking to them about dating, decisions with girls. And they need to hear from you very boldly that this is one of the most important areas of life, and if they take care of it, it's going to serve them well for the rest of their life. Please don't tell them that any of this is bad. Like, I had one of these conversations on a boat trip over to Catalina. It was one of our father-son trips. I sat down with one of my sons on the trip over to Catalina to talk about this. When I got done, he went to go talk with his friends, and all of his friends say, oh, was that the girls are bad conversation? And my boys went, no, actually, Dad said girls are really good. I just have to be careful because it's a powerful thing in our lives. And they're like, oh, that's cool. And I was sad that they hadn't heard the same thing. Okay? And one of my favorite things, so our oldest son, Brock, I hesitate using him as an example a little bit because Brock has this overstated need to do what's right. Like, it's really stressful for him to do what's wrong, which made him, like, ridiculously easy to parent at times. So he had this need to do things right. So he waited until his wedding night to have sex for the first time, which, of course, is our goal for all of our kids, even though it doesn't always happen that way. Well, he waited. And now when he works with high school boys in the football program and he does these leadership classes that Pam talked about, well, one of the things he does with the boys is he says, hey, guys, we're just going to take a little bit of time right now. I will answer any question you guys have about life, about football, about school, whatever. Because he knows. The first question every young
every
man is going to ask is
the same question. When did you have sex the first time,
So when did you
coach?
Do it first, coach? Yeah. Okay? And he gives them a date and time. Because the first time he had sex was his wedding night.
Yeah.
So he tells them, here's the date, here's the time. They're like,
How do you know the date and time?
And that opens the door for him to tell them, guys, I waited till I got married. And now there's no regrets.
And this is why. And so it really opens up a great conversation.
Yeah. Anyway, talk to the boys. Be bold with them because the world's being bold with them and they're getting lost.
Amen. Girls need the same thing. Girls need to be, like, told it is courageous and brave to protect the gift and be wise and discerning in the men you hang out with. And there's in the Talking to Your Kids About Sex book, there's like all kinds of wonderful traditions and positive like interactions, and it's just any conversation you have about this, the more special you can make that conversation and the time, the place, the way, then it's going to be a positive in their life. And so celebrate along the path with them. And I just wanted to do it because we're in California. I just wanted to do a quick little shout out. We in the public schools, there's this attack in this area in the new curriculum that's coming out. So just go and see for yourself. That's all I'm saying. And there's a Facebook group that you might want to be a part of because it will help you stay informed. It's just called Informed Parents of California. So join that group. You'll have all the information that you need to be a savvy parent.
Great. All right. Back to marriage. Mm-hmm. Advice for couples with financial difficulties and stress.
Yes, sir. Me too.
yeah, we walk by faith. And Bill and I get this. I mean, we got married at 20. We did not. We had part-time jobs. We weren't finished with our college, and so I mean, we started out, and so without hardly any money, and we were praying for groceries. Did I share that story?
Mm-hmm. You did.
Yeah. So it was. It's amazing. God, if you just keep walking with God, He will provide step by step by step. But there comes a point where you might ask the question. Like, how can we make forward movement? Do we need to get a marriage mentor who's, like, good with money? And, you know, they can help us decide how to have another income stream because in California, you need, like, 27 million income streams just to afford your, you know, mortgage. Do we need to learn about budgeting and go through, you know, Financial Peace University or, like, my friend Ellie Kay is America's family finance expert, you know, take her blogs, do the training through Ellie. So making yourself more savvy as a couple will bring you together as a couple. The two things that people fight about the most are kids and money. Third would be sex, kids, money, and sex. And so if you seek to get on the same page, even if it's stressful and times are lean, it's not going to pull you apart. Because you're pulling together.
The first thing I would say is don't be ashamed. It's a pretty big club.
It especially in California.
People aren't announcing. Like, people don't show up at church and go, "Hi, we're having financial trouble. It's good to see you."
I was so proud of the Fulkerson's video because I thought they spoke to, like, the dilemma of what's happened in California.
And for some people, it's as simple as they don't have a plan. And if that's you, things like Financial Peace University, doing some financial training will help.
Crown Financial Concepts. Yeah. There's some good ministries out there that don't cost anything that to get good training.
The real reason, though, why money is an issue for couples is we are all emotionally attached to money. Like, Jesus was very clear about that. He said, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Now, most of us would think he'd say it the other way. Where your heart is, your treasure will be. He said it the opposite, that our heart follows our money. And the big implication in marriage is you express who you are by the way you handle money. And again, you married somebody different than you. So some people, there's four basic motivations. Some people need authority in their life. And what we mean by that is they have to have authority over the decisions that affect them. Some people love attention, which means they love to have events going on in their life that keep attention high. Some people, they want acceptance, which means they want a really simple process so that money never gets in the way of relationships. And some people need accuracy, which means they need a specific budget. They need us to follow the budget because they find security in that. Well, we tend to marry somebody with a different motivation than we have. Like, my primary motivation is acceptance. Pam's primary motivation is attention. We express those in the way we handle money.
Right. Like, it's all for me. I work super hard so I can spend that money to build relationships. It's all about relationships. You know, I work hard all year so at Christmas I can take all my daughter-in-laws to the spa because they love me more when I spend money at the spa on them. You know, I work really hard so that Bill and I can be the one that pick up the check. when we're with our kids, because we know how tough it is for them as they're raising their children. So, yeah, so for me, it's about relationships. I work really hard so we can have a nice family vacation twice a year. Everybody gets to come, even if we have to fly them there, using our money to get them there or our miles to get them there. So it's all about the relationship. But I was a little more spontaneous in spending that. It was never outrageous, but I was more spontaneous because that's my personality style. And it was driving Bill, Mr. Peace, let's make it simple, like everything auto deposit, auto everything, all lined out, you know. It was kind of throwing him off, and he was getting very frustrated. He was fine that I spent the money, but like, would be nice to know it's coming, that when you're going to spend the money. And so finally we put an line item, Pam's fund. So at least I know how much per year that we've decided together that I can spend on fun. And I can spend it, you know, different times of the year. I just try to give Bill a heads up when I'm going to spend it.
So part of the answer is having a financial plan that allows you to be yourself. Because if your plan doesn't include you the ability to be yourself, you will defy your budget. And that's when tension arises. Like, I thought we decided this and then you did that. That's when, and we do that because we have a need to express who we are. The other challenge in California specifically is, like, life's getting crazy financially in this town. Like it's shocking to us as we travel how much more we spend on gas than everybody else.
How much more we spend on?
Because we are the smartest state in the country, right? So yeah, so we just know how to charge more. So you may need to be praying for wisdom as a couple on how to make more money, because California is crazy. Yeah, it's crazy expensive.
And we actually gave our kids freedom to not stay in California. We're like, if God calls you to another state, life will be easier, and we're okay with that. We'll come to you. You know, right now, we are in California because we have to be in California. Bill's parents are here, and they're not moving anywhere at all.
Like as we travel, one of the questions we were asked all the time is, so how much is your house worth?
Yeah, and when our house went on the market, we like got a lot of criticism because of the price tag of our house. And it's like, it's just a regular house, just like all you have. It's in East County, but you know how much houses cost here. There were people across the country that like, you're extravagant. How can you call yourself a Christian? I'm like, it's just a house. Like, it happens to be close to the beach because we live in California. But I mean, if my house was on the beach, it would be like gazillions. It's the same little house, and people in other places don't understand that. And so that was hard and harsh, because people could find it. I couldn't hide it. We're trying to sell the house. Yeah, but that was hard on us. We're like, it was hard for us to hold on to that puppy.
All right, I'm gonna move on. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it okay to tell my wife that she is not acting like a Christian when she is railing on me?
Mm-hmm. Not unless you are good at dodging frying pans. Probably better to do it when she's not railing on you. Yeah. Yeah. Most any time, if there's a conflict right in the middle of conflict, is probably not the best time to point out those things. Yeah.
Bill, as the husband, go ahead.
Well, the way the question is written, the answer is no, but the issue is real. And folks, I want to challenge all of us to create a way for your spouse to talk to you. Like we get highly emotional about our marriage relationships, and we treat each other in ways we won't treat anybody else. And we are often unreasonable. We often are demanding. We often are just cruel to one another, and it's not that we don't love each other and we don't care about one another. It's that it's so intense. Like, there's no relationship like marriage, and there isn't anybody else on earth that you share your emotional well-being, your spiritual well-being, your finances, your body, your daily routine. You trust this person with all the weak areas of your life. You're like, you're used to the slow growth areas of your life, and you give yourself grace. That doesn't mean your spouse is going to give you grace in those areas. And so it just gets really intense. And when we have hurt each other, there needs to be a way to come and talk about it. So if I were this person, I assume it's a husband since he is saying it's my wife. Like I would go to her, like I would go to Pam and say, Pam, I need to talk to you about this. How can I approach you? And I would get her to respond to me because, again, our emotions follow our decisions. So if she decides how I can approach her, it's going to shift the emotional atmosphere. I'm pretty sure if I say to her, you're not acting like a Christian, that's probably a couple more weeks of arguing. So, but there has to be a way to talk about it.
Right.
And so let's agree we're going to create an opening for our spouse to come and talk to us about stuff that's tough and find a way to express your panic. Because I'm sure the railing is because she's panicked about something.
Yeah, something deeper going on.
Yeah. And you ladies do have a gift that when something's wrong in a relationship, you sense it. And studies have proven it. Like the alarm system for relationships is in the female side of the human race. So when something's wrong, you'll start making noise because the alarm will go off. And if we can come up with a reasonable way to respond to the alarm, it'll be very helpful in your relationship. But yeah, those words aren't going to work.
So, like, I want to address a bigger issue of, like, if you're always being attacked, like, always, 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 it seems like it's toxic coming your direction, verbal abuse. How do you manage that? And so first, yeah, identify it. So if love is patient, love is kind, I prayed, and I'm like, what would be the opposite of 1 Corinthians 13? Well, then toxic would be, let's turn 1 Corinthians 13 inside out and backwards. So this is my definition of toxic. Toxic relationship is impatient, unkind. It's always envious and jealous. It's boastful and self-glorifying. It's arrogant and proud. It's self-centered and rude. It easily loses its temper, and it keeps track of all offenses and holds a grudge. It's thrilled when people look and feel stupid. It loves a mistake because the error can be replayed over and over again. It runs to evil. It never protects others, and it gives up on life and people easily. So that's toxic. And my friend Leslie, like, has a wonderful three-step process to deal with if you're in a toxic relationship. So if things are really falling apart and you are being verbally abused, the first is you speak up. What you're saying is hurting my feelings right now. And then you stand up and you say, I'm not going to stay here and listen to you say these things that are not true about me. And then you step back and you walk out of the room. You don't have to take that verbal abuse day after day after day after day after day. And we encourage you to be, when you step back, and I'm going to call a counselor. I'd like for you to come with me, but I'm for sure coming. So if things are that bad, if they're truly toxic, then don't go it alone. Get help.
Really good. Thank you. How many books have you guys written?
I have contracts for 51 between us. So, and Bill has about 10 solo, and the rest have my name on them.
But. Wow. Okay. Sorry, I mixed up my questions in that. I was enthralled in your answer.
And I'm grateful that God allowed Bill and I to do what we love, helping other people, that I didn't have to just get a job. And that is Bill, that's all Bill, because early on when we just built our house, we needed a second income to afford that mortgage. And Bill's like, don't just go get a job, do what God created you to do. And so that meant taking our last $25 and signing me up for a writer's conference. And at that writer's conference, I got some opportunities, and then my writing career started from that point on. Had he not believed in me, those books wouldn't be out there.
Awesome. That's great. Okay, so if a husband and wife are in disagreement about something, by the way, we only have about 10 minutes, so.
Okay.
If a husband and wife are in disagreement about something big that the Bible is not clear about, like specific, what do you do, especially if each believes with conviction that their opinion is lined up with God's will?
Just listen to the husband.
I was staring at you like.
So we have a series of 10 best decisions books primarily because of this question right here. If you are facing a major decision and you are having disagreements with it, you need to have a process you go through. It needs to be a process that you trust. And we have it outlined in seven simple skills. It's in 10 best decisions a man can make. The simplest way to describe it to you is you have got to courageously as a couple make a list of all the reasons why you should say yes to this or say no to it. You need to prioritize all of the reasons. Okay? Because we all get emotionally attached to our reasons. We get emotionally attached to why we think this should happen. And we get into a battle of wills with each other. So now it's not about the decision anymore. It's about who has a stronger will. And you got to get it out of that arena. And it has to come down to a list of priorities. And you compare the high priority items to one another. Because I guarantee you, if you have a strong personality, you've got one or two really strong reasons for doing what you want to do and about 15 supporting reasons. And you have to separate them out so that you're only talking about what we call A-level reasons. And when you get the A-level reasons compared to one another, you typically get clarity. Yeah. And now it's not about the two of you fighting each other. It's about what has God shown us about what's really important in life. It's a very rigorous process, but if you're at odds with one another, you need to go through a rigorous process and get it out of the relational mode and put it into a decision-making process so it's not personal between the two of you.
Right.
Okay, because there's probably a solution neither one of you have thought of yet, but you can't see it because you're too emotionally embroiled in it.
Yeah. In Seven Simple Skills for Every Woman, it's on page 90 and 91, the little worksheet. And if you go to our website, love-wise.com, I think it's one of this month's free giveaways, too. And it's in a blog, so the picture of it. So you can get the actual worksheet is what I'm saying.
Awesome. Really good. Okay. We can try to squeeze two more, but we'll see. So individually, what in your relationship did you struggle with and then have to really sit there and admit it was you causing the issue? It's me.
Let me start. So the longest argument Pam and I have ever had lasted a year, and it was primarily because of me. And the circumstance was Pam, we had agreed Pam needed to go back to school and finish her degree in order to build a foundation for her writing ministry. We had three kids at the time. Our youngest was not in school yet. And I thought Pam was spending too much time. I thought she needed to go at a slower pace than what she was pursuing. And I was really concerned that it was going to throw our priorities out of whack. And my biggest fear was that Pam was going to overcommit to her education and writing, and I was going to have to back off on my career in order to help with the kids to facilitate it.
And we'd only been at our church about 18 months. Like, he was the lead pastor. So it's pretty demanding.
Well, and in my heart, I didn't think Pam was being reasonable about it. Like, I really thought, because you probably figured out she's a pretty passionate individual. And I thought, she's just going to get way too involved with this, and she's going to love it, and she's going to feel the call of God to do this, and she's going to blow right past any boundaries, and it's going to hurt my career for her to do this.
And I was only doing two classes at a time, so it wasn't like I was full-time.
Right. Like, I look back on it now, and Pam was actually being very reasonable about it, but it didn't seem to me like she was. And so I spent a lot of time trying to convince her that her priorities were wrong. And the way it would work is we would get together and talk, and we would make no progress. And we have a commitment between the two of us that we will finish every argument that we have. And what we mean by that is we have talked it through to the point that we appreciate each other and we're back in love with one another.
Even if we don't have an answer.
Right. So we would get together and we would talk. We could not get to that point. So then we would pray with one another and say, we'll meet again on Thursday. We would meet Thursday. We'd go through the same process. Couldn't resolve it. Okay, we'll meet Sunday afternoon. We would meet Sunday afternoon. We couldn't resolve it.
Over and over and over.
We did this for a year. And it was like it was really a deep, disagreement between the two of us. Like, we were getting to the point that we didn't like each other.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't resolve this, and we couldn't, you know, get each other on our page. And it just hit a desperate moment one day. Like, we...
We just, like,
talking,
fell on the ground, yeah, in front of our sofa, and I was sobbing. I'm like, Lord, I feel like you called me to finish my degree. I feel like I'm obeying you, but Bill, like, hates me for this, and this doesn't even feel right. But if there's something that I did, something that I said, if there's something about me, then, like, show me. I'm open, Lord.
And my prayer was, God, I love this woman, but I don't like her right now. And if it's something I'm doing, you need to help me figure it out. And if it's something she's doing, you need to help her figure it out, because we cannot live like this any longer. And it wasn't too long after we prayed that prayer that I realized the reason why Pam couldn't back off on what she was doing and couldn't respond to what I was trying to tell her is that God had put this on her heart. And at that point, I had a real problem. Because up until that point, I thought I was arguing with Pam. And I believed I could outlast Pam. But when I realized I was now arguing with God, it's like, oh, I can't win this one.
And so I was up. I was doing a class at Cal State San
Marcos. Hang on. So I was praying now. I said, okay, God, I get it now. I need to get on board with this, but I need to find a way to communicate this to Pam, because I have argued with her for a year. And if I said to her, hey, Pam, I'm good. I get it now. I'm good. It wouldn't have been believable, because I had put up so much resistance. Yeah. And so I prayed, God, could you give me a way to say this to her in a way that she gets it? Okay.
So I was up at on campus at Cal State San Marcos, and I was in an English class, the romantics. And the professor was saying, romance is dead. It's always been dead. It's just an illusion. No two people could stay married for a lifetime. And all the women are like, yeah, because men are scum. And all the guys are like head down, taking notes, you know, trying to just survive. And the door popped open, and in walked Bill with a dozen red roses. And he gave them to me, a kiss, and he just walked out the door. And all the ladies that are, well, my professor said, so is your anniversary? I'm like, no. Your birthday? No. Why did he come in my class then? Well, I think he wanted me to know that he believes in me, and he believes in the dream that God has given to me, that I'm going to be a writer. And then all the women are like, so does he have a brother? Does Bill have a brother?
Now, again, one of the things I know about Pam is she loves public attention. So I figured if I went into her world and made a statement, it would get the message across. If your wife doesn't like public attention, this is probably not a good idea. But for Pam, like, it was spot on.
And it was like, it keeps giving. It's the story that keeps giving. That day, my professor and I both had a writing contract, and my book came out before his book came out. So there was a little ego stuff going on there. But he was, like, hostile against Christianity, and every day I was having to stand up for my faith. But that day I got to shine the light of Jesus's love, and everybody listened. So it's very cool. And I
had no idea the conversation that was going on in the class.
Right.
That's just God orchestrates.
It was God timing for that.
Yeah.
And then that story has been used by God to help couples on radios. We share it. We've gotten letters like, my husband, you know, he like applauded me going back to school now. Thank you for that breakthrough. And then it got a couple book contracts. We shared that story because the publishers were like, wow, that is the kind of love we want to put on pages. So, you know, if you do the right thing at the right time, for the right reasons, the righteous God will add himself to it.
Right. But the lead up was intense. Again, I grew up with a mom that you couldn't reason with. Anytime I feel like I have a wife I can't reason with, it hits a deep place in my life. But fortunately, God redeemed that one.
That's so good. Okay, this is the last question. It's kind of tied up in that previous question. There's a lot of parenting questions that I just set aside for right now. So when you're here for brunch, everybody who wrote a parenting question, just crowd around the table and ask them lots of questions. But this is, how do you prioritize calling when you have a family? And this could be grandparents. It could be, you know, us with younger kids or babies or whatever. How do you prioritize that?
Like your ministry calling?
Right, like what you feel the Lord is leading you to.
You know, for me, it's always Holy Spirit driven. And so that means that what I do is for an audience of one. And I need to obey God above every other voice. So that's kind of like the baseline. But then I don't want to make everybody mad at me, you know, because I'm following God's call on my life. Because I'm a human, so I could misinterpret the speed of the call. I could misinterpret the intensity of the call, etc. And so I actually prayed that God would show me, like, the intensity, the pace, and how to actually walk out my call a couple of ways. I'm like, Lord, eventually, like, Bill, if it's your thing, we have to agree on it. It has to be a way that we can both walk out our calls. And what does that look like? And so having agreement between us, that's one of the markers that I look for. And the second is I ask God to give me something in each one of my kids that I would know if I was moving too fast in my call for their good. And so I ask God to give me a flashing yellow light for each person in my family. And for example, if I move too fast, my oldest son gets argumentative. If I move too fast in my calling, my middle son, he gets
moody
and angry. If I move too fast in my calling, my youngest son withdraws and becomes quiet. If I move too fast for Bill's pace, he is like, the elevator doors close. He's not going to open up to me. And by praying that, I was able to then recognize and then adjust my walking out my call.
And I would say in response to this, folks, we're trying to be servants in a celebrity culture. And we need to approach our call as servants, which means you can always live according to your priorities. Because God always works according to priorities. And so things that have helped me, I have always asked the question, who are the most important people in the room? Like when our kids were really young, they were the most important people in the room.
Yeah.
And if I lost my influence with my kids to build my influence at the church,
it's not worth it.
The priorities are off. And my first ministry in life is to Pam.
Yeah.
Like if my relationship with Pam is not working, I don't have anything to offer the rest of the church.
I'm the first lamb in the flock.
And most people won't force you to think that way, you know, because the work's important and it's a call of God. And, you know, the Bible says we should reach the world for Christ. And it's easy to go there and to think that making money, building your business, building your church, building your ministry is the most important thing. And we can give you evidence because you can't pay your bills if you don't do that. Okay, so we can fuel that and we can make it sound really, really important. And then we start saying things like, your family will understand if God's called, and your family will sacrifice if God's called, and that's kind of backwards. Okay. Now, God does give you grace for your calling. Okay. So if God's calling you to something, he equips your family to be able to help you do that. And to just give you one example, so we start writing books, and we start doing conferences, and we're praying, God, we want to do this, but we don't want our kids to pay the price for it. You know, we want them on board. We want them to feel like, wow, this is part of what our family does. And my mentor, Jim, pulled my kids aside one day, and he said, hey, guys, here, I need to talk to you. He said, you do realize your lives are copyrighted, and if your parents talk about you, they owe you money. So we worked out a deal with our kids that they would get a percentage of all of our royalties.
Yeah. At first they were like $1 every time I use my name, and then $2. So they were trying, and I'm like, I can't keep track of that. So twice a year when we get our royalty, y'all get a percentage. That's what's going to, and it goes into your college fund, and you can spend 10% of it on something fun, and the rest is going to your college fund.
And what happened with that is the guys got buy-in to what we were doing. Yeah. Because they wanted to know how our book sales were going. They wanted to, you know, so it became a way that God's grace just built it in. And I think Pam shared about we had families that would watch our kids when we were gone, and those families spoiled our kids.
Yeah.
So our kids would, if we were home too much, they would go, aren't you guys going to go do a conference anytime soon?
The Garcias want to take us to the Dodger game. When are you guys going to go speak again?
Yeah. So it created buy-in for them. And that's what God does. He creates grace so that the calling and your family work together. And you don't want to fight that. Yeah. And often we do that. We just like, we try to squelch higher priorities so that we can pursue the intense lower priorities. But God always works on priorities, folks. And you, when you start sacrificing higher priorities to do what you think is really important, I would just say stop and reevaluate. And this is coming from a life of ministry. I never built the church that I really wanted to, but I have a bigger ministry than I ever dreamed of.
Because all of our kids are lights for the gospel right now. And yeah. So it was worth it for us. And we know that we are not able to get to all of the questions and things, but we hope we have a long-term relationship with you. And so that's why that go to LoveWise and click subscribe is up there. And there's three different levels that you can join at. The first one is like just free digital. First one's just free. You get a newsletter once a month. And then the second one is 119, and that stands for?
It's $1.98 from Proverbs 19:8. Those who
one who gets wisdom loves life. And that's everything digital. So a lot of the tools that we've talked about that are like charts or podcasts or things on different topics, release a new one every month. And then the next one is $4.19, which is our verse. So it's $4.19, and that is we love because God first loved us. And that, every time a Pharaoh book comes out, you get it first hot off the press, as well as everything else. And then the last one is developer level, and that is from 2 Timothy 2:2, and it's $22.22, and that helps develop our membership. And it's really gonna. We have some few changes that are coming, including having Zooms with us and a dedicated page. You can ask questions at any time. So basically, more access to us. So check that out. And then these are like, if you want to drop prayer requests in to us, and we take you home on our heart. I'll put these on the table out there, and you can just give us your name and your email, and we'll make sure you get signed up. But definitely let us know how we can pray for you. There's a section there, because as we started this with that verse out of Philippians 1:7, it's right that we feel this way about you because we have you on our heart. And many of you, because we have had interactions over the years, you have become very dear friends.
Very good. All yours.
Yeah, let's give them a hand.